The following is a documentary about St. Anne's Park. We revisit the infamous capital murder which took place in St. Anne's.
Kevin O'Kelly asked the Minister for Justice, Patrick Cooney, this morning if there was any evidence of a political motive behind this recent killing.
There's nothing so far to suggest that there was any political motivation, as you call it, but we don't concede that political motivation could excuse a crime, or that any motivation can excuse.
We speak to Mick Hartford of Dublin City Council and Philip Doherty about the park's history.
That was the first time that they actually spoke about turning it into a public park. It wasn't a public park before that.
But as a kid, I used to play around there and have a look around it. And you'd see there's a big mound of green grass there. That's where the house stood at the end of the avenue.
And we also speak to everyday users of the park.
I know that the old house that used to be there, and I remember playing in it as a child.
A living park in its history. Philip Doherty, historian.
Well, in 1939, Dublin Corporation decided to buy the St. Anne's. See, Benjamin Lee Guinness, when he bought all the land then, in 1837, he enlarged it and he decided to call it St. Anne's because there's a holy well just there beside the dog pond, as it was called, and that's St. Anne's Well. And then when he had a daughter, Annie Lee, and when she was born, they built a tower and the bridge just there. You can see it on the way up from the road, the Clontarf Road.
Mick Hartford, Dublin City Council Parks Officer.
Well, St. Anne's got its name from the Holy Well of St. Anne, which is a well that goes back probably 600-700 years on the site. It was a site of pilgrimage. There are quite a lot of holy wells throughout Ireland. And it's unusual, the actual spelling originally was A-N-N, St. Anne, and somewhere.
But if you're walking along the Long Avenue there, over to your right-hand side where the house was, you'll see a little archway. There was a sunken road there that the people had the right of way across the estate, but he didn't want to be looking at them, so he sunk the road so that they could go to their work and go to Mass in nearby Raheny, and they wouldn't be seen passing from the house. That was an old trick.
What we're trying to do, we've had a programme over the last few years of putting in more pathways to make the park more universally accessible, because we believe that no matter what your ability, it should not restrict you from accessing anything within our public spaces. So it is a challenge. We've put in footpaths where people never walked. People walked, but few people walked. Mm. Now when you see these new pathways in, it's opening up parts of the park to people that would have never had the opportunity to be in those. So there will be a school of opinion that say that we're ruining the park, but I don't think so. I think what we're doing is making it more accessible because demographics are changing.
Well, then he bought some ground from John Vernon of Clontarf Castle, and in 1837 he enlarged it and called it St. Anne's because of the holy well that's there beside the pond. You'll still see the little, it's a little kind of a cave thing, but there's no water in the well at the moment. The Guinnesses, they originated in Kildare. And then Arthur Guinness, in 1764, he moved out to Beaumont House. Well, he had 10 children. So two of the sons, Arthur Guinness II, he married a girl called Mary Ann Lee. And then his brother, Benjamin, he married her sister, Rebecca, 11 years later. So Benjamin Lee, he had a son. That's how the Lee is part of the Guinness family. It's always Lee with Guinness. So Benjamin Lee, he had a son called...
During World War II, the house was reportedly used by the military. This was before Dublin City Council took the park into its ownership.
Well, the original Arthur Guinness, his son, was the one that bought the first piece of land. And then the grandson of the original Arthur was Lord Ardilaun. And it was him and Lady Ardilaun that more or less developed the estate into what it became. Now, they were regarded as, they would have been the richest family in Ireland. Now, he's...
those that know about St Anne's Park will know about the beautiful Monterey cypress tree that has been transformed into a masterpiece. Only taking 3 weeks, 112 hours, UK tree sculptor Tommy Craggs has been turning heads ever since he began in 2015. He uses only a chainsaw, but his art has brought the tree to life with 10 metres of badgers, owls and a beautiful swan. The tree is to reflect both the park wildlife and the biodiversity of Bull Island.
One of the newest features of it is the tree just at the end of Betty's Glen, and you'll see it carved with eagles and swans and a badger. Oh, there's squirrels and woodpeckers, and it's a brilliant job.
The tree is finished, but waiting on an official opening.
What's your name?
Anita Cummins.
So do you use St Anne's Park?
I do, yes.
And do you feel safe in the park?
I feel very safe, yes.
Do you know any of the history of the park?
I know that the old house that used to be there, and I remember playing in it as a child.
And do you see a lot of families in St Anne's Park?
Yes, especially at weekends.
And what do you do there?
I walk a couple of days a week.
And why do you think families use St Anne's Park compared to any other park that they could use?
Well, it's a very safe park for children. They can go on their bikes and their prams and babies and so forth. And it's a very safe area.
And what's the vibe like when you go down for your walks?
Oh, it's great.
Yeah. And have you ever got into any bother there or seen any problems?
Never. I never see anything. Just the birds, the animals, yes, so the trees.
So you would recommend St Anne's Park for everyone and anyone?
Yes, I would very much recommend it.
Well, that's great. Thank you very much, Anita.
You're welcome.
Mick Hartford, Dublin City Council Parks Officer.
So I'm the District Parks Officer for the northeast of the city, and St Anne's Park is one of my parks that I'm responsible for. And I'm based, my office is here in St Anne's Park. We have over 30 playing pitches covering soccer, GAA and rugby. We have an 18-hole par 3 golf course. We have 10 tennis courts. We have a remote control model car track, dog park, playground. Our Rose Garden, of course, which is St Anne's, is quite famous.
In 1975, then, one of the gardeners decided he wanted to build a Rose Garden. So that's how the present Rose Garden is, which is one of the main attractions in the park.
We have a Chinese garden, which is a relatively new installation, and a Physic Garden. The Physic Garden is our latest one that opened 2 years ago. There's restricted times on that because a lot of the infrastructure in there is quite delicate, so we can only open it when we have staff available. It's open Monday to Thursday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m, Friday, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Unfortunately, it's not open at the weekends, but it is during the summer when the Irish Register of Herbalists are working in their Physic Garden. They open up and kind of invigilate it for us. The first flush of roses are true just at the end of June, first week in July. That's when your first flush. You get about 2.5 flushes of roses. There's a lot of mystery put into roses. But basically roses are shrubs that flower on the current season's growth. So the job is to encourage as much fresh, new growth each year. And that's where your roses bloom.
And if you go to the Rose Garden, all the roses have names, you know, but one of my favourite is one called Satchimo. It's a red rose, and you see it to the left-hand side up on the top part as you go in. And every year I bring the kids around to have a look at it, see Satchimo's rose. They all have different names, lovely.
I see you've just finished the park run there.
Yeah, it was a great 5K run that I just done in St Anne's. I love doing it every Saturday morning.
Yeah, would you mind me asking what time it took you?
26 minutes, 37 seconds.
That's pretty good, pretty good. Have you done it here many times?
About 7 or 8 times now.
Grand. And is the park something that you use generally, or is it?
Yeah, it's a great place to bring the family, bring the kids. There's 2 playgrounds in the park itself, and just a great environment, really.
And another thing was when they were doing the Dublin United Tramway Company, when they were building the tram line out to Howth, your man had such power over the estate, he wouldn't let them have a double tram line out to Howth. So they had a single tram line.
So we used to play there as kids, Dave, yeah, in the late 50s, early 60s, before it was knocked down. I can't remember when it was actually knocked down and that, but we used to have great fun messing around the old building there and that. You know, there was loads of gas masks and that, and we'd, you know, obviously be trying to, you know, put them on and that, you know, and messing around there, but... It was a fantastic park as regards playing and that, you know. We used to be there with our bicycles cycling around the place and that. Yeah, it was absolutely great fun. Yeah, great.
Well, it was originally 500 acres, but then when the corporation, they decided to build some houses on it. And then Betty's Glen, that was part of the park. And there's houses built there. And then there's football pitches and they have bowls, they have the children's play.
The Guinness family connection with the park continues.
1835 was the first purchase of the 27 acres. That land then was, they bought up more pieces of land and bought the leases out from the Vernon family of Clontarf Castle and Gatesford St. Lawrence from Howth. They were the families that owned quite a lot of the land around the place. And bit by bit they bought up land, and then the son Arthur Edward Guinness, who later became Lord Ardilaun and Ard Ilan, it stands for High Island. Mm-hmm. Of course, they own Cong and County Mayo, Muckross House, and he married Olive White, the Whites of Bantry House, and she became Lady Ardilaun. So it was really from about 1865. That they took over the estate. They used to go on the grand tour, whereas we might go on a 2-week holiday to the sun. They might go for a year and travel around Europe. And hence that they were very much into Roman architecture. Hence there's a lot of follies. Like one of the follies is a replica of the tomb of the Juli. Now the Juli were a Roman family who, for their services to Rome, Caesar gave them the south of France. So in Saint-Rémy in southern France is where their family tomb is. Mm. So that was one of the structures. That's above the pond. And then there's the replica of the Herculaneum Temple. There's the boathouse, the hermitage. When Archbishop Plunkett took over the estate from Lady Ardilaun, kind of gave it to him. She didn't like being out here wandering around after her husband died. And she lived then in her townhouse, which is Ivy House, the Department of Foreign Affairs, as it is in Stephen's Green. She lived there between there and the Shelburne Hotel. Wow. But he took the 500 acres and all that was on it in the 1920s. But he actually found it difficult to upkeep. It's expensive. You can imagine it's expensive to run an estate of that size.
Of course it would be.
And he wanted to dispose of it. So he was in discussion with the Dublin Corporation, as it was then. And eventually in 1938, the house and all the lands were compulsory purchased for approximately £62,000, the 500 acres and all.
It was up for sale. So Dublin Corporation, it was actually... the Lord Mayor Alfie Bourne, he heard it was for sale and he cycled out on his bike and had to look around, and he was determined that this should be preserved for the citizens of Dublin. So he put a motion in action and the corporation eventually bought it.
The 500 acres and all that was on it. The council owned the estate at that stage then, and during the emergency, the Second World War, as the rest of the world knew it, ironically, the house has been used as a store for the ARP, the Air Raid Protection. And on Stephen's Day in 1942, it went on fire. They put it out, and 2 days later, the fire started again. And it was never restored after that. So then,
some people say it was bought for 55,000, some say 80,000. I'm not particularly sure. But when the house went on fire then, on the Christmas Eve 1943, it was burned down. So the corporation claimed the insurance policy on the house, which was actually more than they paid for the house. So they got their price of their house back and they still had their park.
The Red Stables were part of the Ardilaun estate.
When you look at the building itself, it's an amazing building, and you think this was built for horses. Now, the architect that designed it, he would have been involved with Cove Cathedral beforehand. He was an ecclesiastical architect, and he designed All Saints Church in Holt Road in Raheny, which is kind of a mini replica of Salisbury Cathedral.
The stables were designed by George Ashlin, a 19th century architect known for his work on Cove Cathedral. The stables are laid out in a courtyard format and are in the typical Victorian Sussex style. The building is a protected structure because of its unique historic and architectural merit. The renovation of the stables after completion were reopened in 2006 and are now used to house activities which emphasise the promotion of the contemporary arts.
Actually, the cafe is in a new location. The cafe used to be on the south side of the Red Stables, but that's actually in architecture, it's the Madrid Convention.
Yeah.
That if you are adding something to a building, you should not try and match what was, because it's pastiche then of, it's not what it was. So you always go for something more contemporary to show that it's a newer part, and yet it picks up the line of.
The latest on the search for the bank robbers who killed the Gorda in Dublin yesterday, George Devlin reports. Archbishop Buchanan of Dublin has condemned the killing as cold-blooded murder. Bishop Ryan of Clonfert.
On the afternoon of the 11th of September 1975, three armed raiders robbed the Colestor branch of the Bank of Ireland on Dublin's Howth Road. The raiders had made their escape, having taken more than £7,000 from the bank. As they sped away, they narrowly avoided colliding with a car driven by off-duty Garda Michael Reynolds. Garda Reynolds went in pursuit, accompanied by his wife Vera and daughter Emer. The chase eventually reached St Anne's Park in Raheny, where the raiders abandoned their car. Garda Reynolds, who was unarmed, pursued them on foot, caught and dragged one of them to the ground, and the other raiders called then on Garda Reynolds to release their accomplice. When he did not do so, the raider shot Garda Reynolds dead.
Meanwhile, the big search is continuing for the bank raiders who shot Garda Reynolds at St Anne's Park in Raheny. The offer of a £20,000 reward came from the Minister for Justice following a meeting of the government. It's for information leading to the arrest and conviction of the murderers of the Garda, 27-year-old Michael Reynolds. Proportionate amounts are offered for other worthwhile information. There's still no sign of the £7,000 stolen from the bank, but a false moustache, a wig and a spent cartridge case were discovered near the murder scene.
Kevin O'Kelly asked the Minister for Justice, Patrick Cooney, this morning if there was any evidence of a political motive behind this recent killing.
There's nothing so far to suggest that there was any political motivation, as you call it, but we don't concede that political motivation could excuse a crime, or that any motivation can excuse a crime of this magnitude, or indeed can excuse any crime. That's to admit that the end in some way justifies the means, and of course that's a totally immoral proposition.
One has heard that it took quite a time before the first Garda car arrived on the scene after the call.
Well, one hears all sorts of rumours after an incident such as this, but I'm satisfied that the normal level of Garda efficiency in a situation such as this operated on this occasion.
Would you now consider arming the Garda, at least as happened before, having a revolver carried in each patrol car?
The guards are very proud of their tradition of being an unarmed police force and are very sensitive and aware of all the implications.
St Anne's Park, a living park and its history. A fascinating place to visit, full of memories, some happy, some sad. Whatever the park holds for you, it continues to provide a unique recreational space for North East Dublin.
This programme was compiled, produced and presented by David Daly, Carl Weinman and Dominique Cleary for Near FM 90.3. As part of the Wolverhampton University Broadcasting, Journalism and Media degree course in Coláiste Dúlach.